Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 287. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, it's going to snow this weekend.
And Phil Wilson, who met Uri Geller at the airport, and his phone is all bent.
Now, everybody's not going to know who Uri Geller is, so that's...
No, everyone knows who Uri Geller is.
Well,
of a certain age,
yes.
Okay, Uri Geller was this, psychic guy that could hold spoons and bend spoons and all that. And when people outed him, he ended up suing him, claiming he was real.
He's still alive.
Really?
Well, you know, anybody can bend spoons. Uri did it just by thinking about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's what so Phil's going to go into the Apple store and say, Uri Geller bent my phone.
Yeah, but best of my best efforts, I was unable to fold my iPhone in half. So,
How did it really happen, though?
Oh, I fell on my butt, basically.
Oh, wow.
Tell the whole story. Yeah, you're remodeling.
We're remodeling our kitchen, and that kind of happened. So,
Was it in cargo pants at the time?
No, it was not. It was in my back pocket. So.
See, I actually went out and purchased a pair of cargo pants this week. Specifically for the big phone. Yep.
Really? Well, yep. Phil, actually, I did not know that Tweety Bird jammies had back pockets. so this is news to me.
Well, anyway. For some reason, my printer is running in the background. I hope you guys, that doesn't become annoying. My apologies.
As long as you're printing checks, that's fine.
I'm not printing a darn thing. You don't know why we're doing it. So,
yeah.
Phil, I got to ask you, do you have Apple Care? Would that make a difference, Steve?
Oh, yeah.
I have Apple Care, yes.
Oh, you're good then.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, I did that too. And I usually don't, but I did this time.
Oh, man.
I do think you should try the Uri Geller excuse. But
yeah.
All right. Hey, listen.
I was telling you that the one thing that didn't break was the screen.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I turn it on, I see it's broken on the inside. So not on the outside, just on the inside.
So does the screen still work? I mean, does the phone still work?
No, it does not.
Oh. Phil, this has got to be sad for you. So are you broken on the inside too?
Broken on the inside.
Okay. Just checking.
Dude, I was broken on the inside so far before this. Anyway.
We have a ton of stories to cover today. So I think we should leap into it. And Tim. You're the one who put this first one in, and I got to tell you that ever since they spun out of 3M, I have no idea what they do.
No, I'm Asian, a data storage company. You know, they've been known for things like on the original iMac, they dropped the floppy disk, so they made the replacement external floppy disk for the original iMac. Obviously, a lot of their legacy stuff like floppies and other removable storage, zip drive and things like that have kind of dried up.
And so, CDs.
Yeah, DVDs, or CDs and DVDs. Yeah, they're on the way down. So they've got to figure out kind of what they're doing. And they've got, an investor who wants them to basically sell off all the assets and give the money back to shareholders.
Yeah.
Yep. It sounds like the advice that Michael Dell gave Steve Jobs at Apple,
right?
Like 16 or 17 years ago.
Yeah, but do you remember? You obviously remember this when they owned the Kodak radiology film business, and they ended up selling that for $80 million to keep going.
Yep. So, and Kodak actually on the graphic art side bought their proofing business.
I did not know that
color proofing business, Matchprint. So yeah, it was just they've been trading assets back and forth, and I guess I haven't really tracked them that closely, but I guess they've sort of run out of ideas, and now it's looking like it's going to be a fire sale here.
Yeah.
That investor private equity firm is calling for the CEO to get out of there and just let the board sell off the pieces which are worth more than the total, and they're talking about selling the building, which I guess has been talked about for a long time.
Yeah.
That palace that they built after it was spun out of 3M over in Oakdale. And you got to wonder about this company. I guess even the Memorex consumer business that they own, that's in the tank. There isn't much that's been going right for that company.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're toast.
Well, and then the U of M sued, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint for...
And T-Mobile.
And T-Mobile for a technology they have to essentially up the throughput and make 4G LTE faster. And they're claiming they're being infringed.
Yeah, that guy who holds the patents, I guess he's the head of the Digital Technology Center at the U now. Nice Greek gentleman with a Greek name that I can't remember right now.
Giannakis.
Yeah, there you go.
Georgios Giannakis.
Easy for you to say. But anyway, he apparently, but the U was saying, we have to protect our inventors. And then, you know, in parentheses, and by God, we can use the money.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. Or they could just raise student tuition and put them more in debt. So one of the two.
Yeah. They've looked at that, and this is a better alternative, apparently.
I was going to say, you know, it's not like they're going to lower tuition if they win. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like they don't need the money, my friends. They don't need the money.
The other thing that kind of was interesting was that in Julio's story, which I stuck in there as well, he says that the U is getting $40 million a year from royalties and licensing. That seems a little low to me. I don't know why. Yeah.
It is. That was my point, Phil, is their licensing revenue is pretty pathetic compared to other Big Ten universities and other large, you know, research institutions. So that's where they need the money, is that they rely on that patent or that, you know, licensing revenue, royalty revenue. And they had a big one run out recently, didn't they, Steve? What was that big one that ran out? Oh, was it an AIDS drug or something?
Or a component in a drug.
Yeah, they've had some obviously biomedical breakthroughs over the years, but now they're desperately seeking more royalty revenue, and that's part of that whole, you know, venture center Office of Technology Commercialization effort of theirs.
That's
a lot of real early stage stuff, which may or may not pay off down the line. But if this one pays off for them, it'll make up for a lot of what they've lost. But
let's hope.
How many years might it take, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, my question is that all of this stuff is being, you know, developed and patented at the university level, a state-funded university university, and one that is obviously supported by the taxpayers. So why doesn't this sort of stuff reduce tuition? You know, obviously, you know, it's very fresh in my mind because my son is now transferring to the U, and I see the difference between tuition between NDSU and the University of Minnesota, and it's a significant difference, let's just say.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I got one answer for you, Phil. Too many administrative people.
Holy crap.
Well, and that's been called out.
If we're generating $40 million a year in patent royalties, what percentage of that goes back into actually funding education?
Probably very little.
Yeah, very little, yeah.
But remember the physical plant, you know, when the legislature approved under
Valenti?
No. The president of the U. Udoff?
Oh, under Udoff. Yeah,
on this building splurge, yeah. And the legislature gave them the thumbs up to do it, and they let all these bonds and all that. Well, now that debt's all due. And, you know, granted, the university's buildings are in good shape, and they've got a lot more of them.
Yeah, but the education itself isn't better, and that's what.
Well,
the
money, yeah, exactly,
needs.
Exactly.
I mean, the money needs to go into education, not more research centers, and that's talking to a guy who's a big fan of innovation and a big fan of research. But you know, when you see that kind of growth of tuition increases, and you know, it is somewhat immoral. It really is.
It's the growth in the layers of administrative people. That's the big problem. And that has been called out by others. But, you know, how do they get out from under that? You know, bureaucracies grow big and you can't just whack them, you know, instantly and cut it back, you know. But that's where, you know, that $40 million that they make on royalties, that doesn't even begin to cover, you know, the layers of administrative people that have been added to that institution over the last 20 years. You know what I mean?
Well, remember too that that Clayton Christensen, when he was interviewed by that VC on, I'll find a link, when he was asked about the future of education and colleges and universities and the pricing and all of that, he said, within 15 years, half the colleges and universities in the United States will be out of business. They'll be bankrupt.
Yep.
Because the model just can't sustain. I mean, growth, it just can't sustain it. I mean, I look at some of these young kids. I mean, I know young people who have $80,000 to $100,000 in debt.
And they've acquired that debt getting a degree in something like secondary education, where it will take years.
Yeah, it's their first house.
And multiple jobs for them to even meet, you know, be able to pay that back.
Yep.
And that's insane. That's just insane. So, okay, we've ranted. Sorry.
All right. So let's talk about something on the upside, which is CA Technologies spun out their $100 million business called ArcServe, and they're coming to Minnesota.
Which looks like it looks like this is competition for Code 42. Am I wrong? Or at least a segment of their market is backup?
Well, it's big enterprises that buy this stuff, right. I think, which is where CA comes from. And the product has existed for a long time. Yeah. I think it was an acquisition because CA used to acquire companies like Popcorn, you know. And but they, I don't know how long ago they spun it out. Not real recently, but apparently they decided they needed to look for a new home. And I thought it was funny that the CEO and one of the, maybe the chairman,
live here.
Both happened to live here, but they said, but that had nothing to do with
it. Oh, not at all. Why,
no, right. It was just a coincidence.
Yeah. No, they could just hop on the jet and live here. Yeah. Well, see, what's interesting is, you know, the business, to your point about it being big enterprise, Graham, is it deals with storage area networks.
Yeah.
So, you know, these great big racks full of storage and in multiple locations, and it's all connected with fiber and all of that. I mean, it's all, that's what it's about. It's about being able to recover from these RAID arrays of hard disks. And
yeah, but doesn't Code 42 want to expand into the enterprise more? They
I'm sure, but these guys are not only already there, they've been there for 20 years.
And I'm not saying that, hey, believe me, there's other competition besides that for Code 42, but I'm just saying it's like, oh, well, here we go.
Well, you know, and it fits in well with our local companies, Compellent, now part of Dell, but much of it's still based here. And of course, Symantec is big into that large corporate, you know, backup business. But I was going to say, you raise an interesting point about Code 42, Phil, because one of the top executives of Compellent, of course, became the COO of Code 42.
Oh, I'd forgotten
a couple
that.
Years ago, Brian Bell. So
yes, that's right. Yeah.
There's no question they're going towards the enterprise. They're there. I mean, they're in it. But how big? I don't know that they'll ever be directly going head to head with ArcServe, but who knows?
So if I'm also, as I recall in the story, ArcServe's not actually getting any tax incentives to make that move, right? Is that correct? I believe that said that there's no tax incentives there, so they're actually just moving here. However, on the other hand, speaking of Code 42, they're looking for $3 million from this to help augment their uptown headquarters. So the build of their uptown.
And they're talking about investing $70 million within Minneapolis over the next few years. So that makes a lot of sense. You know, I did not know they're talking about moving into this new $55 million Mosaic East office building in Uptown,
which isn't built yet.
Which isn't built yet, and I'm not sure where that's going to go.
Oh, I know where it's going to go. It's just west of where you know, Coco is. Really, I think it's within a block of where Lagoon splits off from Lake.
Yeah,
it's right in that area.
So it's behind that new office building that's already there, right?
I think they're taking down some of the storefronts along that line. So and building this massive, you know, well, it's not massive. I mean, it's actually a good looking structure. So
Do you remember when the story broke? It was in the Tribune, I believe, or it might have been the Business Journal. That's been 6 months ago or so. And I thought, oh my God, this thing's under construction and they're going to be moving in soon. That story leaked out. It wasn't supposed to go out, I guess, that, you know,
the
Code 42 wasn't ready to announce that. And like you say, it's still quite a ways from happening, I guess.
Well, Code 42, I don't think, is moving for at least another year and a half, 2 years, I think.
Wow.
So yeah. this is still a little bit of the ways off, but I know, you know, we know a lot of people over at Code, and we know they're spilling out of that River Place area. So.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah, they're just spilling out of it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They're 400 plus, 500 people now, maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you guys think about the concept of a company as well-funded and as profitable right now as Code 42, looks to be, looking for $3 million of state aid to help build their uptown headquarters? What do you think about that? Is that something that, we think about this cycle of incentives to get people to, move and build and that sort of thing. So,
I got one word, Vikings.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's exactly.
They started
exactly
it.
Right. Yeah, they started. They've started that long before that. So I mean, you look at states like South Dakota that actually. So you come on in, we won't charge you any tax. So.
Yeah, but that's the only way they can get companies to go there. But anyway,
that's true.
No, but this has been going on for years, in a lot of ways it makes sense because. Essentially what it's doing is it's tax deferral stuff and all of that.
Sure.
It allows them to make the transition, and they're going to have all kinds of costs associated with the move and so on. So,
it isn't that much money either. And,
listen to you. It ain't that much money.
I would doubt that they won't get it. I mean, look at what Mayo Clinic did with the state and.
Well, look what the Vikings did with the state.
Yeah.
Well, the city needs to decide how much 400 new jobs in the city cost. Is worth to them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because they're talking about hiring 400 more employees.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're all customer support, aren't they? Are those?
and they'll be competing with ArcServ for them too, which
is
one of the reasons said they want to be here for the talent, the storage talent, the backup talent. And software development.
And the CEO happens to live in Eden Prairie as well.
Yep. Right. Yep. Right.
Just a coincidence.
Yeah.
Well, so
funny how that happens.
So speaking of IT, were we? No.
I guess sort of.
The story about Minsure is still fixing flaws with its IT system. Sure. You know, one of the big things about this is there's somebody who I promised I would keep his name out of it, but I sent him an email and said, can you just give me he's not even in the area of Minsure. He has nothing to do with Minsure. He's at the state of Minnesota level in IT. And I've known this guy for 25 years. And the punchline is it's all about the integrations with all the different insurance companies. That's the reason that this thing is so hosed or has been. And that's where all the work is. It's not a matter of can they build a great transactional site. It's a matter of every single insurance company has to be able to present their data from their systems in the Minsure system. And it's all those integrations. And that's what the deal killer is on this and why it's taken so long and why it's so screwed up and has been.
Is there some reason that the state decided to create their own exchange as opposed to using the federal one?
I don't know the answer to that.
The Obama administration wanted the states, as many states, to do it as possible, and Minnesota fell right in lockstep. There aren't that many, as you would expect. There aren't that many states, or what is the count of states that have their own?
Well, actually, there's quite a few. Yeah,
it's like 28 or something.
Yeah, it's not. It's not much more than half. Yeah.
Well, some of them couldn't afford it. They claimed.
Right.
So
it's only 12 that do.
No,
my wife just chimed in. 12.
What?
She knows these things.
Oh, really? I thought it was 28.
Oh, I don't think so. And, some of them have been like abject bombs. I mean, like, Oregon?
The national one has not been a great
That's right.
success either.
No. See, I think they should have built it in Joomla or WordPress.
Yeah, right.
Just to be done with it.
No, this whole thing's a bag of snakes because the insurance companies do not want to do this. This is not good for them. So they're going to make it as difficult as possible.
Hmm. Yeah. The funny part was last year when we were looking at Minsure, looking at all the policies and stuff, it was click here for this, this quote and or this these plans, and you'd click it and it would be a PDF. It was generated by the insurance company. So you'd sit and look at all these PDFs. I was like, seriously?
No. It looks like 16 have their own exchange.
Okay.
16. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Phil.
Well, close.
No worries.
Wow. Yeah.
It was close.
Closer but, than but, you 28. Know,
some of those 16, Phil, might be the ones that have, like, given. There's some that have, like, given up, haven't they? Did Oregon give up? It seems to me that there's been more than one, maybe, that just said, oh, the hell with it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or it's not working.
Following it that close.
But that said, yes, anyway, it's kind of a task. But you know, when you try to turn a battleship around, it ain't going to come without some costs. So right. The fact of the matter is that the U.S. needs affordable health care, and you know, you're going to take some shots to get it right. So Social Security didn't just fall into place. So
no, and it was fought tooth and nail for 30 years afterwards.
Kind of like what's happening now.
So. Kind of.
Anyway.
Hey, are you guys, do you realize?
Don't say hey, okay? Now don't say hey.
All right.
That's better. Howdy. Yeah, there you go.
we're just a couple of weeks away from Black Friday. And it looks like it's shaping up to be kind of an interesting, especially for e-commerce, interesting time and holiday, but Best Buy is playing the blues.
Yeah, they're trying to manage expectations down.
They sure are.
Yeah, and it's a good strategy. I don't think it's going to work for them, though.
Really? Because the analysts will still say, hey, come on.
Yeah, no, all the analysts are looking at data across from all sorts of other retailers. And, it's all kind of all over the place at this point. But they're expecting a better holiday than last year. I'm not sure if I would be in that boat, though. So it's a good move by Jolet and company.
To be conservative,
because you really don't know what is going to happen. I mean, they'll have a much better idea on Thanksgiving and Black Friday how good the Christmas season will be. So we'll get a lot of reports out of that after that.
Oh, God, yeah. We'll get so many, it'll boggle the mind.
But one of the things for Best Buy specifically is the adoption of 4K TVs. And, you know, most of us have just finished adopting the HD sets and, you know, finally have replaced all the old tube sets. And these things are going to last for a while. I mean, we still have our first HD set that we bought 10 years ago. That still works fine.
Yeah.
So until that goes out, and it's now sitting in our bedroom. So if that dies, I probably am not going to replace it with a 4K. I'm going to probably only buy one of those, when I need one. And that's going to be years in the future. So I don't think that a lot of people are going to be buying 4K TVs this holiday season.
Well, and also because there'll be it'll probably up-level current Blu-rays, but there'll be a new Blu-ray standard for 4K, right?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. But, we're still a long ways off before you have a lot of content. Netflix is streaming some 4K content, but you have to have a big honking pipe to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough, I think. And it's good to see that Best Buy is trying to, you know, to say, hey, this may not work. You know, it may not be a great Christmas again because the economy is still pretty much in the tank.
Right.
Say, I was in there the other day looking at appliances in the Richfield store, and I learned something. They don't do Black Friday for appliances. They do Black November. It's the whole month. They're like deep discounting stuff big time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, huh. I found that interesting.
Well, all right, Best Buy? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd never really shopped appliances in there before, and it was quite a selection. Huh. And the prices, holy crap. There were some deals that were almost 60% of retail. Or
hey, are you getting a kickback? What's going on here? This is plate. This is some
sort of it's native payola. Advertising.
It's some sort of payola thing going on there from Graham. Jeez.
I don't think so.
Well, we keep talking about all these retailers, Target and Best Buy and everybody. We should go to them and get advertising.
Or get something printed in 3D at Target.
Yeah, what's up with that? Now,
I don't know.
I thought you'd be all over this, Steve.
Well, so it says this article says shoppers can visit the Shapeways section of Target's website to select an item to produce. They pick out the material of a charm or ornament and add any special customization like messages or monograms. So I'm assuming that the amount of 3D printing necessary is not going to be, oh, by the way, go shop for 45 minutes and come back. This will be, you just stand there for 2 minutes and it's done, right?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I think 3D, you order 3D it print. Online and yeah. They ship it to you.
Yeah, 3D printing is not that fast. Oh,
got it.
And okay. You said it's Shapeway?
The Shapeways section of Target's website.
It sounds like, doesn't that sound like that? I don't know, guys, remember the old Saturday Night Live bit, the Mainway?
Oh.
the bag of glass that you can get for the kids? Yeah, bag of glass. Chainsaw Bear. Anyway,
well, Shapeways is a very well-known service bureau, though, that's been doing 3D printing for quite a while, right, Steve?
Yeah, yeah.
They're out east, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, who's the Cafe Press?
Yeah.
They're kind of like a Cafe Press where you go there and you decide, hey, this is what I want, and then they'll make 10 of them for you. I need 10 caps, or I need 20 coffee mugs, and here's my logo. So,
say, speaking of 3D printing, I saw that cube printer, that really funky-looking squarish one, you can get that thing for like $9.99 now. I saw it on that new that Woot site called Meh. Have you heard of Meh? M-E-H?
Yes.
It's the Woot guy's new site, which Daring Fireball wrote about, John Gruber.
Meh is a real great. That's exciting. I really want to go see the deals
meh.com, baby.
I sure don't know what I would do with a 3D printer after, you know, printing two or three things. I don't either. I think it's cool as all get out, but I'm not sure what I would do with it.
Key fobs for the whole family.
For everybody, you know? Yeah. I'm printing everybody's Christmas gift.
No. I'll get excited when I get a Star Trek replicator.
There you go.
You know, to say, I need a new iPhone 6 for Phil.
Yeah, I was of course, you know, doing the geek thing and wandering around Micro Center last week, and it was the same sort. They had a printer going, and it was like, they are insanely affordable right now.
So. Yeah, yeah.
I just want to say Earl Grey hot.
Yeah.
And have it come out the replicator. There you go.
Wow.
Although it's not that hard to stick the little cartridge in your Keurig and make it. So that's we're close.
Right. We are. Yeah. Well, yeah. We're good. I want a holodeck. That's all I care about.
Yep. We know that. Yeah. We're waiting for it. You what? Shut you up.
I know. So somebody put in here this story today about Bushel, BUSHEL.com.
Yeah,
and when I went to it, I began to look at it and I thought, oh man, these guys are going to get crushed by Jamf, because Jamf could do something like this. It's a Jamf company. It is Jamf.
Yeah.
I saw that. And so what it is it's essentially a stripped down mobile device management solution that's web-based, and you can manage up to 3 devices for free, and then each one's $2 a month. So for those of us that have, you know, small businesses and have, you know, 20 devices or 10 devices, you know, whatever you happen to have, you can manage them, provision apps, things like that.
Or if you're like Steve Borsch, who carries 3 devices himself.
That's exactly. Right. That's right.
Whether he needs them or not.
In his cargo pants.
Well, you never know. Yeah, in my cargo pants. Yeah.
That's the name from an MTM management system. It's like that's what you need is call it cargo pants.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a great
all of your devices
name.
In one pair of pants.
Who did the guys who start this, are they still with Jamf, or did they split off and
No, it's a Jamf company.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, look at the very bottom of the website and you'll see
I see that copyright Jamf software.
Yeah. So
oh man. Well, these guys are sure in the news lately, aren't they? Wow.
Yep. Well, I think this is a smart strategy on their part, because Jamf as an overall platform and footprint is great. You know, if you're in a school district or you're in a company, then you need to manage both your own devices and bring your own devices from folks. But, you know, they're using 256-bit SSL encryption on this at the web level, and more of these devices are being managed in the cloud. People aren't hooking them up to their computers. So, you know, it seems like the right play at the right time and going after the right segment of business. And I'll also put a link in here to the blog post that they did, Why Bushel.
Yeah.
And that, it's a good explanation of their mission with it. Well,
these guys are running on all cylinders. They're clipping along at about a $50 million a year run rate, Jamfiz. And I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I guess their current valuation is $225 million Jamf is
really?
Worth.
That's now. Great.
Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, I'll put the link in.
Well, I'll tell you what, when they used to do Mac, you know, they did Macs only at the very beginning, and it was one of those, you talk about Jamf and people would, in the IT space would roll their eyes. Well, now that Macs are selling like hotcakes and people are bringing their own Macs and or demanding that they get to use a Mac, their business is, yeah, it's really taken off. So,
yep.
Well, I put one last story in here. This, there's a Care 11 story and we can't embed the video. So I'll put a link to it, you know, cause they play an ad. At the beginning of it, and they don't allow embedding because they have, I'm sure, because of all the ads they have wrapped around the video. But it's about almost 114-year-old woman who is befriended by this Twin Cities Verizon sales guy who sold her son, who's 85, an iPhone. And one thing leads to another, and they show her with an iPad and using it, and she's on Facebook and stuff, and it's just a sweet story. So I thought that cool. Was kind of cool, and actually I wish that when my dad was around that we would have had an iPad for him, you know, we would have been able to get one and so on, because it's just, I mean, it's like the perfect communication device, except I can just see like my uncle who has the beginning stages of Parkinson's trying to hold an iPad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
with the camera, you know, and looked like he was on a roller coaster.
So that'd keep you hopping. That's for sure.
That's right.
So okay. You know, what really the biggest story of the week, at least for Steve, has to do with security. Am I right?
You mean what sort of security?
Oh, a tip would be good.
Steve's security tip of the week.
The barn door is open again.
All right. So, yeah. There,
I was thinking about that when I hear those horses.
There's a new Trojan out called Wire Lurker.
Speaking of horses.
Yeah. And and it's out for the Mac. It was originally made for the Mac. Not that that was a good thing, but it was mainly in China, or it is in China. And what it did was it not only infected the Mac, but when you plugged an iOS device into it via USB, if it was jailbroken or if it was not jailbroken, it would put the Trojan on the iOS device. And Palo Alto Networks, which is a big IT company, security company and all that, is talking about this as a new era in malware. And it's the biggest scale attack they've ever seen. And the thing that just amazed me is, I shouldn't laugh, but the thing that just amazed me is it was used to Trojanize 467 OS X applications on a Chinese app store. Of course.
Now why aren't they using the Apple app store?
Because they're all pirated apps.
Well, then don't be.
Well, but that's come that. On. No, that's what everybody in China does. I mean, you can walk down to any market and
Well,
you can spend 50 cents and buy, you know, Microsoft Windows 8.1. But at any rate,
that's now, about what it's worth, though.
Yeah. Now there's a. Now there's a. Hey, let me finish my tip. So anyway, so there's
just
a.
Just kidding.
I know. There's a Windows variant now being distributed by a different Chinese source. There's 180 Windows executables and 67 OS X applications. Anyway, so I'm going to put links in the show notes about a tool that you can use. You can just copy and paste into your terminal this Wire Lurker detector, And then there's also put a Windows variant version in there. And so my advice and my tip is don't pirate software. It's the number one way malware gets
that's
on your machine.
That's what you got. That's what you,
and run the, run the wire lurker detector. But if you're running a Mac, obviously, make sure in system preferences and security and privacy that you allow apps downloaded from the Mac App Store and identified developers only, unless you really, really, really know what you're doing. And that is the default for the operating system. So unless you have actively gone in and changed it, that's what the default is. And then consider using Sophos antivirus for Mac. It's free. I'll put a link in there as well. And then keep your antivirus definitions up to date. There's a, it's, the default is to just keep them up to date. But and then on Windows, just get a Mac. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Hilarious.
At a minimum, use Microsoft Security Essentials, which is free. And in Windows 8 and 8.1, the built-in antivirus is fabulous. So that's my tip. This is a big deal, Trojan, and it's going to be, hopefully not, but it's so elegantly written, according to many people like Jonathan Zdarsky, that we're going to see this maybe being used over and over and over again, the same development and payload. So now we should talk about our cool thing of the week.
But I'm busy running my terminal. Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Are you really?
No,
I haven't
done that yet.
No. So Phil,
but
what's
I
your...
will. So I'm just, Steve, you use an antivirus software on your Mac?
I don't, because I run something called Little Snitch that talks about whether or not you know, things are phoning home and so on. Plus I know enough about what to do and what not to do. And so I also do.
So you just recommended Zofa software or antivirus, but you don't use it.
Well, I did use it for quite a while, but so everything I download, if I don't download it from a developer, I have a little program that I run and I do the checksum. So I make sure that there wasn't a man in the middle attack and I'm downloading something from someplace that is not really the actual download. So I make sure that it's original.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, okay. but most people don't know how to do that. So
I got you now.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand.
So tell me, Phil.
Yes, sir.
What's your cool thing of the week?
Well, right now it's all about AppleCare. That's what I thought. That's my one cool thing of the week, because I'm so glad I spent the money on that.
So $89 you'll have to spend for a new phone.
I guess that's what it is. I don't know for sure. So I still got to try to pass it off as a defect, but we'll see what happens. Yeah,
good luck with that.
It just bent.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And besides that, I haven't had a chance to really spend much time hanging out with and checking out new things. I did fly my new quadcopter though. So it was kind of fun.
Oh, sweet.
My little nano quadcopter. That was kind of cool.
Huh. You got a camera on it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Mr. Tim.
Yeah, the Amazon sort of surprised everybody by introducing a speaker called Echo this week.
With a microphone.
Yeah, it has a virtual assistant called Alexa, which is like Siri or Google Now or Cortana, where you can ask it questions. So it's like a Bluetooth speaker. You can play music and, you know, stuff you'd expect. So in that way, it's sort of like, I guess, Sonos, but it's a much lower-end version of it. But this addition of this virtual assistant where you can ask it questions and it says stuff back to you is sort of interesting. So, you know, I haven't seen any reviews where they've actually tried to use it, but it sounds like a very interesting idea. It's $200, although if you're a Prime member, you can get it for $100 if you get an invitation. For it at this point. So I think a lot of people have these in their hands, but it's a crazy, crazy product from Amazon.
See, I'm not sure that I want something from someone in my house listening, you know?
Well, you don't trust Jeff Bezos to be a good son.
I don't trust anybody.
I mean, come on. I mean, he's just listening into the...
You're asking Steve Borsch if
to the Borsch household?
Well, okay. So, you know,
And it would say, hey, Steve, go get on the treadmill now.
You know what?
It would be helpful like that, you know?
There's a website that I'm not going to link to that is online net surveillance cameras of the world. And so it's all of these places, people in places that have put webcams in from Foscam and Hikvision and Panasonic and Linksys that have left the default password on, you know, admin or admin12345. And there are something like 60,000 cameras that are, and they break them up by country on this site, that you can just click on and it'll load them and you can sit and watch them. And it's just bizarre. I mean, it's just,
if you've got that kind of time, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, it was that sort of thing where you know, when you introduce a webcam, if you don't know how to secure it, it can be a real problem. Well, I think about this Amazon Echo and, you know, where's this data going? Is it encrypted? Who's going to have it? You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just think it's weird, but okay. Anyway.
All right. So you think it's a scary thing of the week for you?
Well, it's the scary thing. Well, everything's the scary thing of the week for him.
No, yeah, all this stuff seems so cool, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
Are you
optimistic.
Worried about what Apple does with your Siri searches?
No, and I don't really use it very often. So I just use it for reminders and to set things and so forth. But well, so Graham had to drop off because he has 50-yard line seats for the Gophers Iowa game today. That was his cool thing.
So that is pretty cool.
That was funny. And my cool thing is actually a $10 device, and it's the MPOW 4.2 amp 20 watt dual USB car charger. And seriously, I mean, it's $10, and I bought two of them, one for my wife, one for me.
Why do you need this?
Okay, so I need this because we want to be able to charge two devices at once, and every time I plug the USB in or use the cable that's plugged into the USB in the car itself, Bluetooth, every time you start the car, Bluetooth automatically starts to play something. Drives me insane. So we're both plugged into this MPOW. Well, here's the other thing. I can plug in my iPad and also my iPhone. It'll charge both of them. And because it's 20 watt, it actually charges the phones faster if you have two phones in there.
Right.
So it's a really, I mean, it's
it looks, pretty it looks cool nice device. Too.
Yeah. And it feels good. And it, you know, I mean, it's just a nice little product. So
high quality. I would get the white one though.
Okay. Good for you.
Why would you get the white one? Do you have a white interior in your car?
Black is just kind of boring. I don't know. Black would go better with the interior because it is black.
Yeah. I was going to say,
All right. I'll get the black one.
All right. Whatever. Get the black one. Will you?
Yep.
But that's it. That's
there you go.
That's our show. Other than events?
What we got coming up? Oh, we should mention that Graham had drop off, so he's at the Iowa game. He's on his way to the Iowa game. So.
I did. Where did you go to the bathroom or something?
You did say that. I'm sorry. My apologies. I may have. Oh, look, I did.
But do we have any new events?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty much the same story. We do have. I should probably put in the fact that Mobile Twin Cities is happening. Monday night.
Okay.
Yes, I don't have that in there. I'll get that updated. But we have a pretty good event planned if you'd like to join us for that Monday night at Coco. We meet on the second Monday of every month. So feel free to join us.
Well, I just wanted to just say one more thing. I know I kind of alluded to it, but I can't remember if I did it on the show or off the show, but my wife and I last night went and saw Citizen Four, the Edward Snowden movie that was done by Laura Poitras, who is the videographer that he first reached out to, and then she connected Glenn Greenwald and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole thing is one of the most important stories that's ever happened. And I thought the movie was boring.
Yeah.
I really did. It did not. Really,
isn't it like propaganda anyway? Because I can't believe that she would present any other side than the most positive side.
Right. No, but it's
I'm serious. She's like on his side. So how could it be an objective documentary?
Well, I actually thought it was, it just laid out the facts, which was great, but it did not, Here's the thing. If you were somebody like me or my wife who's listened to me ad nauseum, who's followed this story from day one, I mean, the moment, almost within an hour after Edward Snowden's first video was released, I'd watched it. And so I followed this story all the way along. And so I understood everything that was going on and the encryption stuff and the chat stuff they were using. And so I knew all these backstories. But if I had brought in somebody that I said, you know what, this is the most important story of our life or since Watergate, let's say, people would have watched the movie and went, what? I mean, yeah, there's some disturbing stuff in there, but, I don't know. It just did not grab me the way I had hoped it would. So anyway,
Okay.
So there it is.
All right. So you're giving it a thumbs down.
No,
thumbs
I'm not. Down. It's thumbs sideways.
If you got some time to kill and you're like Steve and live for this stuff, yes, it would be good.
Yeah, I'm going to wait till it comes out on Netflix.
There you go. Yeah, do it.
There you go.
All right.
All right. Well, I'm sure there's lots happening. Of course, we'll review it and talk about it next week on
the Men of 8 Gang podcast. Take care.
Have a good week.